Well, welcome again to the Mike Wilson Show on WWGH. In the studio today, I have Sherry Hall, who is the director of the Harding Presidential Sites. Hi, Sherry.
How are you doing, Mike?
Oh, not fine. Not fine.
Not
just fine. I don't know. Don't know where that came from. Anyhow, we've tried to get you on here, and finally our schedules matched up, so we were able to do that. And you have a lot to talk about over there, so.
We have a lot going on, yes.
You sure do. I thought maybe we'd start out with the home itself and what the renovation and all that information about that, what's going on there, possibly.
Okay. Hopefully, listeners have heard that we have a project underway called Harding 2020, and that comprises the restoration of the Harding home and press house and the building of the new Warren G. Harding Presidential Center. The Harding home is a restoration, which is not the same as most of us think of as a renovation at our own homes.
Right.
When we renovate at home, we might knock out some walls and change things. Or a lot of businesses in town that have their insurance agency in an old house, for example, they are doing a renovation. Mm-hmm. Restoration, you are trying to take a property back to how it used to be in real life. And so that's what we're doing at the Harding home. We are making it as accurate as possible to how the house and the grounds looked in 1920, mm-hmm. the year that Warren Harding had his famous front porch campaign and won the presidency.
Certainly. And I guess there's a lot that goes into this, tearing through the old wallpaper back to the original, things such as that.
Yeah, the restoration, we started it, I have to think, year and about 8 months ago, really. Mm-hmm. And it started first with a lot of research. Before you start digging into walls or something, you got to have a good reason to do it. And
right.
So we did a lot of research first. We have a very talented restoration team. It's headed by Chris Buchanan, who's an architect for the Ohio History Connection.
Mm-hmm.
We are a site of the Ohio History Connection, and he specializes in restoration projects. So we had actually him. We had another architect from the Ohio History Connection, as well as a site historian. She works with a lot of the sites in compiling the general history of the site, as well as our site staff as well here in Marion, who spend a lot of time with Warren and Florence Harding.
Oh, really?
I think we're closer to them than probably anybody.
Well, that's true. Yes, I see. Have you uncovered anything interesting in the restoration that...
A lot of things and a lot of unexpected things, things we've had to change our mind about. I think one of the most surprising things was in the kitchen. And to get a feel for that, you have to go into the history of the site itself. The Harding home opened to the public in 1926.
Mm-hmm.
You would have just seen lots of glass cases in the first four rooms of the downstairs of the home. In fact, the Harding Memorial Association, who opened the home, called it the temporary museum in the Harding home.
Okay.
So it was not set up as a house museum.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to build another building, but never had the money to do that. So they just put a lot of mostly White House things in these glass cases, and you could file through them and see them. The caretakers lived upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the case from 1926 until 1965. So the caretakers used the bathroom, used the kitchen. So the kitchen was hard because you had to go back beyond what the caretakers had done.
Right.
All the layers of paint they had put on it.
Mm-hmm.
And go back to the beginning, 1891, when the house was built, and then change directions and come back to 1920.
Okay.
It's very hard to pick a mid date to work with. It would have been much easier to do the house in 1891, go back to the beginning.
Right.
But you had to go to the beginning and build back up to 1920. So there were about 20 layers of paint in the kitchen on the walls, and we had a finishings analysis expert from Pennsylvania who came in and analyzed the order that those layers of paint were painted on.
Okay.
He chemically analyzed them, and then we figured from the chemical analysis, in addition to receipts we had from the house, what we knew about how the Hardings lived there and what they were doing in 1920, what changes they'd made to the house or anything like that, and we came up with the layer of paint that was there during the campaign. So it took a lot of work before even one tool came out.
Right.
Because you don't want to make a mistake.
Most certainly.
And so from then on, it's been, yes, taking the wallpaper off that was put up in 1965. That was not, it was kind of Victorian-ish that the Harding Memorial Association did when they did the last restoration in 65. But it was not original. They wouldn't have had the technology to do that anyway. We do now. So we looked for fragments, especially behind radiators.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Radiators are extremely heavy to move. No one likes to. So fortunately for us, they usually didn't remove the older wallpapers behind the radiators.
Oh, okay.
So that was bonanza when we'd strike that.
Certainly.
So once we had the right, the wallpaper is kind of fused together, the layers. Mm-hmm. So glancing at them with your eye, sometimes you can't tell which is on top of the other. And again, here comes our finishing analysis expert determining what is on top of what. And then, again, consulting receipts, any other evidence we have, we determine which layer was there in 1920. Then we're having that reproduced at this company in Mount Vernon, Ohio.
Oh, okay. So that's my next question.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's taking place right now, actually.
That's great.
So when, and he's done already the vinyl flooring in the kitchen and in the washroom, in the butler's pantry. So that's already been reinstalled, but it's from the samples we found. So it's pretty cool to see new materials that are made identical to the old ones.
Sure, I'm sure it is. I heard that there were some issues with the porch.
The porch always has had issues. It did when the Hardings were there. Now, the porch is not the original one. The Hardings built and moved into the house in 1891. They had just a rectangular, pretty ordinary porch like everybody else did. In 1903, they removed that porch and put the porch we know today on the house. And there's actually a porch at the corner of Greenwood Street and Mount Vernon Avenue on the northeast corner with a near-identical porch. And that porch was there first. Mrs. Harding liked the looks of it and asked Warren if they could, since they had to replace their current porch anyway, it had some problems, if they could copy that in some manner. So they employed Frank Packard, who was a very well-known architect in Columbus, to draw up the plans. So the porch, though, has a flat roof. And anyone who's had a flat roof on their house, on an addition or something, I know I grew up in a house where one room was like that. There's often problems with leaks and other things. Mm-hmm. The porch is not built on any type of a foundation. That wasn't done in those days. So that has contributed to more settling. So there's some structural issues. And so we had to take all last fall and have structural engineers come in and get different ideas on the best way to address the porch. The very best thing to do as far as the porch would have been to tear it off and build something with better engineering.
Right.
But we're not fond of doing things like that. So we said, no, that's not a possibility. We want the original. But what can we do to help it along for the future without destroying it? So that took some time. And the one thing that we're committed to doing is doing this project correctly. And one idea we had was to reopen the house. We thought we might be able to in May of this year. And in January, we made the decision, no, we're not going to do it. We didn't want to rush it. The porch, it was clear, had issues. And we want to, when people come into the restored Harding home, for it to look, be done and be as best as it could be.
Right. Right. Now, I had heard that some archaeologists had done some digging around the back porch or someplace out there.
Yeah, we've had archaeologists anytime that there's any digging on the site, and that goes for the what I'll call the new site north of us where the Presidential Center will be. An archaeologist is always on hand.
Okay.
From the Ohio History Connection. It's her call if they stumble onto something, let's say they're trenching or something, and for utility lines or anything, if there's anything that is abnormal or she wants to explore for a minute, she can call the whole project to a halt. And she's really good about using her common sense and not doing that too often. But and she's very quick as far as determining if there's anything that needs to be looked at closely. We first did an archaeological dig at the rear of the kitchen several years ago, where we were going to rebuild a kitchen addition that was there during the campaign. In 65, when they had done the last restoration, they took the addition off. We wish they hadn't. We needed to put it on. Mm-hmm. So before we did that, we did an archaeological dig. We found the foundation of the kitchen addition, which we weren't sure there would be one because it was put up for just to be a temporary structure. So we knew the exact size of it, which, of course, meshed with the exterior photos we had. But we found an array of broken pieces of porcelain and odds and ends that were consistent with if you sweep out your room.
Okay.
And it made kind of a fan in where the little fragments were. So imagine you're sweeping out your room and outside, and it makes kind of a fan of debris. So that's what was found there. But I think probably more excited we were when they were trenching across to the press house and stumbled into a whole trove of glass bottles.
Oh, okay.
And Megan Marley, our archaeology, she quickly jumps into the trench, as she does, and found a couple hundred all kinds of glass bottles, and some of them were medicines and all different things. And what she determined was this had been a midden, which is a cool word for a trash pit.
All right.
Okay. I like the word midden, so I use that.
Okay.
She's actually going to do a program at the Harding Home, I want to say July 13th, and we'll be advertising that, and we'll do it right on the grounds, and she's going to kind of show some of the things that she found there. And a lot of them, I did some quick research on a couple things, on this worm syrup. It was Dr. Denig's worm syrup, because I just thought it sounded pretty gross.
Yeah.
And found that it was produced in Chillicothe.
Okay.
From about 1850 to, I found the last advertisement in newspapers for it about 1902.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, the thing you have to remember is you think, oh, this was the Harding's trash pit. It wasn't on his property. It was on the property just east because the press house was not built on his property. It was built on the property of George Christian Jr., who was his personal secretary in the Senate and the White House. And his house was used for campaign headquarters. But George's house wasn't there yet when most of these bottles were made.
Okay.
And there was no house there before.
So it was a vacant lot, possibly.
I guess.
Three.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know. There was a house on the east of it where the Presidential Arms condos are now. Maybe it was there. Trash pit, I don't know. But our archaeologist, just to give your listeners something to do if they're bored sometime, a lot of the older houses in Marion apparently have middens in the backyard somewhere, at least one. Sometimes they'd fill it up, then they'd dig another one.
Right.
Because, and I researched this, we didn't have trash pickup in Marion until 1904.
Okay.
Okay, so.
What do you do with your trash?
You bury it.
Right.
And I also found that we also like to take our trash and take it into alleys or into the streets and burn it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talk about the good old days. There's a lot about the good old days that really wasn't that pretty.
Right. We like to dwell on the nice, the pretty things, yes.
But when they're burning garbage in the streets and the alleys, it wouldn't have been the best smelling or best looking thing.
Now, they obviously had indoor plumbing at the time of the that house was built.
Yes.
When was electricity added? Do you know that?
We do. We had to go find that out. Electricity was really happen chance in Marion, as it was in most towns. Mm-hmm. And you did it in stages, and you'd have, as you could afford it as a town, you would say, just like we hear with the street paving, okay, they're going to do this street, and this street mm-hmm. this year. It was the same with the electric. Okay, it started in downtown. That's where we first had electricity, in the businesses and such, street lights. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to fan out into the residential neighborhoods. Of course, Marion was more condensed then. People lived closer to downtown.
Sure.
So the Hardings got electricity in about 1903.
Oh, really?
They lived, 13 years, 12 years with just gas, and then got electricity. Mm-hmm. And to electrify your house was expensive. Your house is already built. You think of when you build a new house, you put the wires behind the walls.
Right.
You got plaster walls. Yeah. And so now you're trying to add electricity to it. So it's cutting into the floors of your second floor to put wiring so you can have lights in the ceilings below. Mm-hmm. Usually you did just... your public areas, which is usually your foyer, reception hall, the Hardings called it, your parlor, your dining room, where guests are going to be.
Right.
You did those first. And then maybe then a couple years later, you're going to do other areas. The Hardings, we found, never put electricity in their dining room nor in their kitchen.
Really?
And that really surprised us, and mm-hmm. we took a long time and made sure that was right. But it operated with gas, and the kitchen, they had a gas stove. At one point, they had two stoves. They had a coal-burning stove and then a gas stove at the same time, but they never updated it. So the kitchen we're putting in the house will look more like an 1891 kitchen than a 1920 kitchen.
All right.
So that was a real surprise to all of us.
Now, did they have servants in the house?
They had about 1907. They had their first servant. Mrs. Harding suffered with chronic kidney disease, and she had quite a serious operation in 1905. And they hired a couple, Frank and Bernice Blackston, who lived in the house. They lived upstairs in what we call the maid's room. It was a guest room. Frank was kind of a chauffeur for the Hardings, would take them to the train station and run errands for them, run them down to Columbus if they wanted to go down there. Bernice would do a lot of the cooking and cleaning. Mrs. Harding was not the biggest cook in the world. She was a very efficient homemaker as far as she liked things organized. She didn't like a lot of knickknacks around. She could tell you where anything was in any closet, on any shelf, anywhere. Even when she was in the White House and was trying to remember what was in Marion and what was in the White House, she could tell you. She cooks when she has to, but she's not going to spend all day in the kitchen. Mm. So they had a cook. Most families, they're a little above middle class. Most families would be able to afford a domestic help. Mm-hmm. The biggest year of immigration in this country was 1906. So there are a lot of people, women particularly, looking for domestic work. So even in the Marion Star or other newspapers, you'll see people advertising for a good German girl or a good Irish girl.
Oh, okay.
I can't imagine, of course, doing that now. But it was, it was not just the rich who could afford a day servant, which was just somebody maybe even not living with you but going home at night. And that was pretty much the standard here in Marion.
Okay, and there is a servant's staircase going into the kitchen, if I remember right. I haven't been there in
quite some time. There's a back stairway that the servants would use, but those were actually built in houses as fire escapes.
Oh, okay.
This was how you're going to escape from the upstairs if you had had a fire. And it also would allow some more ventilation through the house. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I learned a few years ago. And so it wasn't the main, that back stairway in many older homes was more for fire escape than anything else.
Okay. When do you think that the house will be open again?
The house and the presidential center, the entire site, will open all at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So they're going to open most likely Memorial Day weekend of 2020.
Okay.
That gives us a chance to, we have to install exhibits in the press house. We need to do some more work on the grounds. We are going to outline the foundations of the houses that were originally on either side of the home.
Oh.
There was one on the east and one on the west. Both were torn down in the 30s. Because one of the things that our visitors have a problem with is understanding that his wasn't the biggest property on the block.
Right.
And it looks like it when you compare it to the properties of the other houses around there. Mm-hmm. And you, to this date, we would tell people on tours, okay, pretend there's a house on one side and a house on the other. Well, we're going to show them as best we can, and we'll outline the foundations of those houses. We'll also have some subtle signage in the on the grounds, so you can walk over and see who lived in those houses. What were they used for? Here's a picture of what it looked like.
Oh, yeah, that's really neat.
So yes, we're inviting them to explore the grounds as well.
Okay. Okay, great. Now, let's move on to the museum and, and library. First of all, the houses that were torn down, were those houses there at the time that the Hardings were there? Do you know?
Three of the four were.
Okay.
Okay. And we debated that for 9 months as far as what to do with the houses. We are not usually in the business of tearing things down. The one that was not there was my old office, which was a little 1970 ranch house.
Okay.
So that didn't add much to posterity. But one of the houses had had a fire in it at one point, so it had been changed a lot. The other two houses pretty much intact, but really torn up inside. But, and we tried to explore plans to incorporate the houses, to cut off the back and add on to them, whatever. And the Ohio Preservation Office, who we consulted with as well, said, no, you have to do one or the other. You can't chop them up. You can't add on to them. That's not a restoration. You have to, if you're going to keep them, you have to put them the way they were. Okay, well, if I do that, then I got three houses that, what do we do with them?
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to solve the issue of space that we are looking for.
Certainly.
We're not going to give tours in three more houses.
Right.
So after a lot of soul searching and a lot of angst, a group of community leaders and members of the Ohio Historical Society and the site, we decided, now, we need a clean slate. If we're going to do this, we need to do this right and get the kind of space that we needed. This site's always been space challenged. We've never been able to do anything more than give tours, which we have always given fabulous tours. But as far as a program space or exhibit space, we have none. So we needed that. We've always needed that. So we made that tough decision to tear down those houses. We did salvage doors and woodwork and things, and those you'll see in the new presidential center. They're going to come back.
That's cool, yeah.
So we did that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the presidential library itself. How many presidential libraries exist right now?
About 20.
20.
Not every president has one. The libraries, the presidential libraries we think of when we tend to think of that, are the more modern ones, which started with FDR.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, in the last year of a president's term, usually they start fundraising to build their presidential library. And then they turn it over usually to the National Park Service and National Archives to run. The first presidential library ever was built in 1916, and that's the Hayes Presidential Center in Fremont.
It's very impressive.
It's a very impressive property. Mm-hmm. And that was built by the Hayes family. They have a different story than us. They had several generations still living in the house after mm-hmm. President Hayes died. So they had some money up front to start building these things. We didn't. We have a very different story. Our, you know, President Harding's term in the White House ended quite suddenly with his right. death from a heart attack. He was not poisoned. So everybody write that down. He was not poisoned. He died from a heart attack. And Mrs. Harding died just a year later. But she changed her will to give the house and the majority of objects in the house to the Harding Memorial Association. She wanted it to become a museum so people could learn about her husband. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be anywhere without Mrs. Harding. So she dies in 24. The site, the home opens to the public in 26. The Presidential Center really is fulfilling that idea. They knew they needed more space in 1926. It really is history coming around in a circle again. Mm-hmm. And it will give us exhibit space, event space for programs and for the school kids to eat their sack lunches and special events. It will give us a research center, the Harding Presidential Papers, which started out in Marion, away from the public eye for decades. No one was allowed to see them. And then in 1963, they were transferred to the Ohio Historical Society, where they were available for research. And they're going to be coming back to Marion. So they're making the loop, too. So the people in Marion, authors, historians, students, citizens will be able to do some research in the Harding Presidential Papers. Our gift shop will be bigger. Everything that we did to this point has been in the little tiny press house.
Right.
It was our all-in-one visitor center and whatever. But and then we have our exhibit gallery. So we'll be able to delve deeper into the story of President Mrs. Harding, put the story in context, and it's going to be the first time ever that the complete story will be told.
This is really exciting for Marion. I mean, we're going to have dignitaries coming here to, I mean, people doing research.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big thing for Marion. I don't think people here actually realize how big this is.
Yeah. You know, most of our visitors are from out of town. Any summer day when we used to be open, if you would take a survey of our little parking lot at that time, you'd see all kinds of out-of-state license plates, and that's only going to be amplified as the new center opens and the home reopens. There's a lot of people who love to visit presidential sites, and they go from one to the other. They always tell you, you're number 13 on our list, or they tell you where you are on their list. And one of the things they're always impressed with at the Harding site is how many original historical objects we have.
Mm-hmm.
We have more than 6,000. Which is huge.
Thank you, Mrs. Harding.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Florence. So this is going to allow the public to see more of the objects. You never have everything out that's not good for them. Light is not the friend of historical objects.
Right, I know that.
You have to rotate things around and give them rest time. But the house is going to have a different tour. You're going to visit the house, and it's going to be a day during the campaign. And you're going to see what it looked like and what was going on and what was Mrs. Harding doing. And then you go to the Presidential Center, and you'll see a lot of information about the Hardings' early lives. If you're interested in their family histories, you can pull it out and look at their family tree. We have a lot of people that come in, they say, I'm related to the Hardings. Well, there's their family tree. You can check it out.
Sure.
We have to work on several levels. We work for that casual visitor that maybe you've talked into going to the museum with you. They're really only looking for lunch afterwards. But you say, well, please come with me to do this. Well, they can get the nuts and bolts. But let's say you're that presidential buff or that history buff. You want to soak up everything you can. The information is there in a lot of different ways. So you can take from it what you want. We also, are a lot of our visitors are families and children. And so we want ways that families can interact and explore things. So we build our exhibits on several different platforms. So it will satisfy a lot of people's agendas. And you'll be able to see a lot of objects you've never seen before. One of our acquisitions that we're really excited about is the Oval Office chair from the White House.
Oh, okay.
That was donated to us by some people in Akron. It made its way to Akron, but it's in primo shape. They kept very good care of it, and they donated it to us. So we're so excited about that. All we have is a black and white picture of it before. And now you can see it in real life and say, oh, it was dark green. And it brings that black and white picture to life.
Sure, yes.
We'll be telling the story through newsreel footage that was taken at the time, photographs, of course, text, videos, hands-on components. People learn in many different ways, and we like to mix it up. And so if you want to know more about something, maybe you'll press a button and hear a video about it. If you're not interested, fine, you can move on. So it gives people a lot of options in not only how much they want to learn, but in what manner they want to learn it.
The press building out there, I'm not sure if this is right or not. I'd heard that that was a prefabricated building. Is that true?
It's some kind of a kit house.
Okay.
The story always was that it was a Sears house, which Sears houses were very popular for decades. You could buy some pretty large ones or little cottages like that one. But usually you would find it's stamped with Sears. There were serial numbers in the rafters or so, and there aren't any.
Okay.
We think still it was a kit house, but I can't swear to it. And that's what we'll say, because we always want to tell the truth, exactly what we know and what we're not sure of, what we don't know. The press house is the only presidential campaign press house in the country. And it was constructed in 1920 for a place for the newspaper reporters to work. Mm-hmm. And that's really central to the story we're telling. Mr. Harding, of course, was editor of the Marion Daily Star, the only member of the press elected to the presidency. That'll probably still hold, I would think. But he understood what the newspaper reporters needed from the other side of the pencil. He knew they needed a place to work, they needed telephones, they needed a couple telegraph keys. In short, they need a place to hang out and do their job.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave press conferences there once or twice a day. He loved to hang out and talk shop with the newspaper guys. And that project is a combination of restoration and renovation that had been changed a lot in the interior over the years. It had been made into a garage at one point, a storeroom. Of course, we used it for many years as our mini visitor center. So there wasn't much original inside, whereas the outside hasn't changed much at all. So we're putting exhibits in there. I've researched all of the members of the press who worked in there during the campaign. There's a core of about 17 of them. This group of newspaper men, no women, unfortunately, were the top of their craft in 1920, and they all worked in Marion, Ohio for this few months. They all crossed paths right here. So we're going to tell it, that story of the campaign and how the press affected it through the eyes of these guys. And also we want to draw relevance to what people think the role of the press is now with our present society, how the White House and the press get along. We know that's a hot topic, But history doesn't mean anything unless it's relevant to your life.
Right. Yes, I agree with that. So there wasn't, 1920, there weren't a lot of radio stations around yet, were there?
Well, the first one was KDKA Radio in Pittsburgh. It debuts on election night, November 2nd, 1920. It relayed the election news that mm-hmm. Harding had beat James Cox. Not very many people could hear it. Their signal was pretty weak. But radio takes off like wildfire. And in the 20s, there are many, many radio stations that pop up. And one of the things that President Harding was very adamant about was regulating the radio industry so that signals were, the frequencies were assigned.
Right.
Because at first, you can imagine as more and more radio stations come on, you turn it on, it'd be garble. And I remember the days when, you know, you had to get the AM stations right. just right, and you hear mm-hmm. bleeding mm-hmm. over. Well, that was a big problem at first, and he embraced new technology. He thought it, you know, it made a progressive country, a progressive community.
I kind of compare President Harding and radio to President Kennedy with television. Kennedy was probably the first one to others had been on television, but he was the first one to really embrace it and
be at ease with it. Sure. Be at ease with it, yes. Mm-hmm. And you see the presence in the 20s, Coolidge and Hoover after used the radio to a great success, and their wives did too. Mm-hmm. We often think of FDR and the fireside chats as the first time radio was used, and it's not true. You had Grace Coolidge giving weekly addresses. You had Hoover's wife on there. And then during FDR's tenure and Eleanor Roosevelt, they both used the radio to quite successful outcomes.
Mm-hmm. So the press building's not going to be restored to how it was at that time. It's going to be used
it's
for displays.
It's not because, and we
part.
Thought about
it's
it.
It's kind of hard to, you
we'll
don't
be
really
boring.
Have anything to, yeah.
We're going to have, I mean, if we just put a bunch of desks in there, you know, it'd be like, okay, big deal.
That's true.
You know, and we thought about it. We did. But we thought that's really boring. So we're going to take one corner and put the desk in and put the candlestick phone
okay.
and put it the way this is what the reporter would have used. But then we'll have other things in there too. Mm-hmm. Because we thought, well, people will stick their head in and say, you know, because how do you make a reporter's job look exciting?
That's true.
You know.
But
so,
I would be interested in seeing those things. But I can see where a whole building full would
right.
be boring. You're right.
Yeah. And, you know, so we'll do one setup of what this, what the reporter's desk would have looked like and the things that would have been on it.
Okay. So the Presidential Center is going to have a large meeting room. What else is going to be in that building?
One thing that's people won't really see, except on our behind-the-scenes tours, is our collection storage area.
Okay.
Our collections is what we call the old stuff. Okay. All our historic things are called your collections. And we've never had proper collection storage, and that means you have to have a climate-controlled area so things don't deteriorate as fast. And everything's been inventoried. You know, we have an inventory, we have a collections plan, so we know what we have and what we don't have. But we never had great storage. In the Harding home, things were in boxes in the closets, under the beds, in the attic, in the basement. Not ideal.
And probably not in acid-free boxes, I'm guessing.
In acid-free boxes.
Were they? Well, that's good.
Yes. But not in the right environment. So that we'll have storage that it'll be humidity controlled and climate controlled, and that's huge. That's taking the best care possible of the objects that we have and those that people will continue to donate. And one thing I just wanted to mention, that even though we have started construction, of course, of the Presidential Center, we're not done fundraising. And we really want people not only in Marion but Morrow County and then this region to get involved in the project. And if you want to help us out, We'd appreciate it. You can go to our website, which is hardinghome.org. Mm-hmm. There's a tab that says Harding 2020. Go on that, and there's an opportunity to donate. Or give me a call at the Harding Home, and I'll send a brochure to you in the mail. My number is 740-387-9630. So now's the time to get on board. A presidential center doesn't come along too often.
No, it doesn't. That's, like I said, that's pretty exciting news for Marion and the surrounding areas. Is the entrance going to be off of Mount Vernon Avenue or off of Church Street?
Well, kind of both.
Okay.
Okay. The entrance to the site, you can... my office is in a building right now, a white building, with all its siding torn off. It won't be ugly forever. It's just west of the Harding Home. Just west of that is the old alley. That'll be one way north. So you can enter off Mount Vernon, and then you can enter from Church Street, exit and enter off Church Street. So easy to pull through, much more parking than we've had. We had 8 spaces before. Bus parking along Church Street, and then the entrance to the Presidential Center will be right off the parking lot on the west side of the building. That's where you'll go to buy your tickets to the Presidential Center, to the house, and then so you start from there, and then you're off and running.
Okay. I saw something. Looks like a guardhouse there.
There is.
Is that something fairly new?
Back by the press house, there's a sentry house that's a reproduction. But in all our pictures from the campaign, that's where a policeman would keep watch.
Okay.
And there was one by the press house. We built it to the exact dimensions and placement. And there was also one on campaign days that they would roll into the street right along the curb on Mount Vernon Avenue. We are not going to do that because we would hamper traffic if we did that. But we thought it'd be really fun to put that sentry house back. We also, part of the alley back there, there's pictures people have seen of Harding playing horseshoes.
Mm-hmm.
We will have a horseshoe pit.
Oh, okay.
So
this sounds like fun.
I know. So rubber horseshoes only, so we don't kill someone. But you can try your hand at horseshoes, and you'll have pictures of him nearby, so you can be inspired by him playing horseshoes.
Oh, that's great. So, Memorial Day of 2020.
Memorial Day 2020. Well, on that Saturday.
Okay.
On that Saturday.
Memorial Day.
Yeah, Memorial Day weekend 2020. I don't see any reason why that won't work.
Okay. What programs do you have coming up here in the near future? Anything this year?
We just had our waffle breakfast a couple weeks ago.
And Mrs. Harding had a special recipe for waffles, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
So next year that'll be at the Presidential Center. We have our archaeology program in, maybe it's June 13th. I don't know. I'll have to look at that. But it'll be on our Facebook page, and we'll get that out there. We also have the Harding Symposium the third week, end of July, and we're doing suffrage this year. Mary Ellen Withrow, in fact, is going to be our keynote speaker at our dinner. We've got a great lineup of speakers for that. That's all. I'll link that on our Facebook.
This is WWGH Radio 100.